Although the Parsha of Chayesara is mostly not about Sarah, it's about finding a wife for Yitzchak, but of course the beginning of the Parsha is about Sarah, it is Chayesara, and I'd like to spend the opening portion of the Shir taking a look at a Rashi about what we call it Chayesara. It's the Pasuk describes the passing of Sarah, and Rashi gives us something of the background to what happened. The Rashi is in Pasuk Beis, Perek Kaf Gimel Pasuk Beis, on the words Lespoda Sarah Velivkosa. So the Psukim, of course, we know, Vayu Chaye Sarah, she was 127, and she died in Kiryas Arba, the Chevron Vayavo, Avraham Lespoda Sarah Velivkosa. Avram comes to eulogize Sarah, to cry for her. Rashi comments, and Rashi's source is in the Medrash, actually in the Pirkei de Belezer. Nismucha misa Sarah lakedas Yitzchak. So the death of Sarah is juxtaposed with Akedas Yitzchak at the end of Parshas Vayera, of course dominated by Akedas Yitzchak, and then now we have Chaye Sarah, the passing of Sarah. Now what's the connection between the two? Well, as we know, because it was as a result of the hearing the tidings of the Akeda. Her son had been prepared to be slaughtered. Vikimat shelo nishchat. Those are Rashi's words. Kimat shelo nishchat. Now, if you translate that literally, I think normally we gloss over this a bit, as we would say Rashi in our own words, that he was almost killed. Rashi doesn't say he was almost killed. Rashi says he was almost not killed, which isn't true. He was not killed. He was almost, yes, killed. How do the words kim'at shelo nishchat, what do they mean? And Mefarshi Rashi talk about this. And the result is parcha nishmasa mimena umesam. The shock was enough to kill her, it seems. But what's the meaning of kimat shelo nishchat? So the Maharal says something very interesting. Yitzchak wasn't killed. But the difference between him not being killed and him almost being killed was almost nothing. In other words, Avram was inches away from killing him, and then the Malach stopped. Which means the result was lo nishchat, and he wasn't killed. But kim'at shelo nishchat, his not being killed was the basis of something so slight that itself produced a trauma, because the shock is, the reverberations is, if it wasn't for that ma'at, he would have been killed. It's a very interesting comment, I think, lahavdil, but if a person is ever... should never happen, but he steps out, he's not looking, and a bus comes or a car comes and they weren't looking, and it's just a hair's breadth between. So the good news is he's okay, but and there is no bad news, but nonetheless there's a kind of a trauma that lingers. It takes a while to recover from the fact that it's kepesa beni levena mavis. It's difficult to get over it. You just replay it again and again. It was, Had I just been 3 inches more forward, or had it just been going a little bit faster? So you're okay, but it takes a while to recover. And from someone who's in a fragile state, that kimat shelo nishchat, that traumatized Sarah. Uparcha nishmas. Now, of course, Rashi's looking at the pasuk. We are looking at Rashi. As if to say, as we know, Rashi's job is not to tell us things, even if they're very important and even if they're very interesting. Rashi's job is always to explain something in the pasuk. Here, we seem to have a classic case of what's Rashi gets involved in this every once in a while. Smichas Parshios, he'll talk about it, what's the Meragdim doing next to Miriam, and what's Nazir doing next to Sota. And it's a niche that Rashi gets involved in every once in a while. And here, in the beginning of Chaye Sarah, once again, Mamisa Sarah, to Akedas Yitzchak, it's that idea. It's about juxtaposition of sections of the Torah. Interestingly, Mefarshei Rashi raise a number of questions on this phenomenon. We say, we want to say, that it's Michas Parshas, the two Parshas are together, how do you explain it, what does it tell us? But there are a number of questions here. Firstly, we should note that Smichus Parshas is actually anomalous somewhat for Rashi. Rashi rarely comments on the Parsha as a whole. Rashi is an itemized Perush. That means that 99% at least of Rashi's comments focus exclusively on the words in front of him, either the Pasuk or the half a Pasuk or the phrase or the word. And when he's commenting on that word, nothing else exists, almost. Not what came before and not what came after it. What is the meaning of this word? What's the meaning of this phrase? Unlike other Mefarshim who will take a much more sweeping approach through the Parsha as a whole, Abarbanel and others. That being the case, it's unusual for Rashi to comment on Smichus Parshios because it's a very general comment on the Parsha as a whole, a word, a phrase. Rashi will do it. But because it's a general comment about the Parsha, Rashi will always make that comment at the beginning of the Parsha. This is the most general thing he can say, and therefore, as you begin the new Parsha, Rashi will say, why is this Parsha next to the other Parsha? Invariably, that's the case. Our situation, therefore, is a departure from the norm. We would expect this comment to be on the words Vayuchai Sarah. And here already the question is, Vayuchai Sarah, it's right next to the Akedah, why are the two together? And Rashi will give us the explanation. Rashi's comment on the Smichus here is not his first comment on the Parsha. It's not even in the first Pasuk of the Parsha. It's tucked away there and towards the end of the second Pasuk on the word L'spod L'sara V'Lifkosa, which are already into details. So we've gone two Pasukim in, and Rashi says, you know, by the way, what's this Parsha doing next to the other Parsha? It's an intriguing question, but it should have been intriguing from the very outset. Why is this comment not to be found where a Smichus Parsha's comment is always found with Rashi at the very beginning? That's the first question. Secondly, we should remember that even when Rashi talks about Smichus Parsha's, nonetheless, he talks about that for the same reason he talks about anything, because there's something about the Pasuk that says Darsheini, there's something that seems to be unusual or difficult or noteworthy, and Rashi comments. Now, when we translate that into the idea of Smichus Parshios, that means that Rashi will only ever get involved in Smichus Parshios when there's something seems unusual about the order, as if to say, what's this doing next to that Parsha? It's almost like it's a problem, akin to the itemized problems of the words and phrases that Rashi comments. And therefore, you'll always find that when Rashi asks, Lama nismacha Parshas A to Parshas B, the subtext of his question is, it's unusual. They shouldn't have been together for whatever reason. And then you have to find out what the alternative would be and how this Rashi's explanation comes to resolve that. But if you have one Parsha written after another Parsha, and you have no reason to assume that anything happened in between, then you don't have a question and you don't have an answer. As far as we know, between Akedah Slak and Misa Sara, are we aware that anything else happened? No. And therefore, in a sense, we're almost bothered by Rashi's question. Rashi says, you know what, these two Parshas are next to each other? Maybe we do know. Maybe they're next to each other simply because there's nothing else in between. A time can elapse between one Parsha and another. Lama nismacha Parshas Noach to Parshas Bereishis. Because Noach came after Bereishis and nothing else happened in between. It may be a lot of time elapsed in between. The Torah doesn't make us wait 500 years between one Parsha and another just because 500 years elapsed between them. And therefore, at the end of Vayera, you have the Akedah, and now you have Chaye Sara, and maybe that's all there is to it. Maybe just because that's the next thing that happened. So it doesn't perhaps even seem to be an issue that needs to be resolved. Okay. A third question. And this is a bit of a disappointment. These two sections are not next to each other in the Torah. And I'm not talking about the Haftorah of Parshas Vayera. In the end of the Akedah, the Maftir actually, the in Perikav Beis of Parshas Vayera, and Pasuk Yutes is the end of the Akedah. Yeshev Avam Bever Sheva. Pasuk Kaf to Pasuk Kaf Dalet, those final five psukim, or something else? What are they? Not the Akedah. He hears Milcah had children, and we find out all their names, and then there's more children, and then there's Besuel, and for whatever reason. Now, whatever the meaning of those psukim, one thing is for sure, they're not the Akedah. Which means that if you begin to formulate the issue as, you know, what's Chayei Sarah doing next to the Akedah, we should stop and consider that it's not next to the Akedah. Moreover, we should know that Maftir, again that Pasuk Kaf, in lest we're perhaps inclined to brush it aside as if to say, like, how long could it have taken already? I mean, you know, it doesn't take that long to read. Maybe it's not really a significant episode, so it's not considered to be a hefsek or a chatzitza. Pasuk Kaf is introduced with the words by Yehi Acharei Hadvarim Ha'ele. Sometimes the Torah introduces an episode vis-a-vis the earlier one with the word Achar Hadvarim Ha'ele, which is actually how the Akedah is introduced in the beginning of Perek Kaf Beis. And sometimes it says Acharei Hadvarim Ha'ele. What's the difference between Achar and Acharei? And actually, it's a machlokus in the Medrash, but Rashi is on record. He's already spoken about this in Parshas Lech Lecha, that the difference between them is that Achar means straight after, soon after, and Acharei means a long time after. In the words of Chazal, Achar is samuch, meaning afterwards, but quite connected, soon after, straight after. And Acharei is muflag, distant from, a long time after. Interestingly, in terms of the word itself, why does Achar mean soon after and Acharei means a long time after? How does the Yud is not a big letter, how does it give us a long time? The Radak, in the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, which actually begins by Hi Acharei Moshe, explains that actually Acharei, as opposed to Achar, is the plural of Achar. Just like Ben and Benay, Achar and Acharei. Achar means off the back of, and therefore Acharei means off the backs of. In other words, a number of things happened. It's a plural which indicates numerous units of time, otherwise known to us as Mufka. This being the case, given that Maftir happened in the words of the Pasuk itself, according to Rashi's own explanation, a significant time after the Akedah, so then Parshas Chayei Sarah happened after that significant time after the Akedah, but we're no longer looking at Smichas Parshios. V'chol ze omer darshein, if we could only sum up the questions, it seems to have checked out negative on every single criteria for Smichas Parshios. For Rashi itself, it's not his opening comment, which Smichas Parshios normally is. There doesn't seem to be anything amiss as to why the Parshios shouldn't be Somach, and they're not. You put all that together and then come back to Rashi and talks about, you know, Nisbach HaMisa Sara, we understand that we need to take a closer look at this Rashi. And I'm very happy to do so because it's such a well-known Rashi. The ones that we're so familiar with, they're the ones that we really need to take a good look at. And therefore, Meforshei Rashi, and it's a delight to behold, because the Sefer Zikaron and the Mizrahi and the Gur, they're all agreeing with each other. They're all in collusion here. They say exactly the same thing. That what we have before us here in this Rashi is a unique case of Smichas Parshios. In fact, it's such a unique case, it's actually more correct to say that it's not even a unique case of Smichas Parshios. Because it might not even be a question of Smichas Parshios at all. We should note that Rashi's phraseology, when he gets involved in the enterprise called Smichas Parshios, always refers to them as such. Nismacha Parshas Shiluach Meraglim leParshas Miriam. Nismacha Parshas Nozir leParshas Sota. When Rashi wants to talk about the juxtaposition of sections in the Torah, he calls them as such. It's very interesting to note, going back to the Rashi, our Rashi, that he doesn't say Nismecha Parshas Misas Miriam Le Parshas Hakeda, but rather he says Nismecha Misas Miriam Le Hakedas Yitzhak. He talks about the juxtaposition, not of the sections in the Torah, but of the events. What's the background to all of this? As we've mentioned, Rashi's not getting involved in Smichus Parshas here. There's no reason to get involved in it, and they're not even Samach. That's a non-issue. So what is Rashi getting involved? So the key to understanding this Rashi is to go back to earlier Rashi. And the more we get a sense of the breadth of Rashi's comment here, the more we can come back. The Pasuk says, Vayavo Avraham, Lispod Lesara Vilivkosa. Avram, Vayavo Avraham, Avram came. Now the simple understanding of Vayavo Avraham, even though Mefarshim discuss it, is that he must have come from somewhere. And Rashi, interestingly, tells us where that place was. Where did he come from? Mi Be'er Sheva. That's the earlier Rashi, just one line top. Vayavo Avraham, Mi Be'er Sheva. Now we look at this Rashi, he came from Be'er Sheva, but what is this, right? Mazeh Va'al Mazeh. What's in Be'er Sheva and why is he coming from there? Well, firstly, why does Rashi say Be'er Sheva? Say Mefarshim very simply, because the Pasuk says he came from somewhere, but doesn't say where, and in the absence of specifying where he came from, we must default to the most recently mentioned place. And the Torah always works that way. If it uses pronouns or doesn't give us information, we're relying on the most recent information. The last place we've seen Avram is in Be'er Sheva, because in the final Pasuk of the Akedah, Pasuk Yotes, reads, Vayechu Yachtav El Be'er Shava. Everyone came home safe and sound. Everyone came back safe and sound. Vayechu Yachtav El Be'er Shava. Vayeshev Abraham Be'er Shava. Now, so the end of the Akedah has Avram in Be'er Sheva. The question is, why did Avram go to Be'er Sheva after the Akedah? Is that a question? Maybe he lived there. Well, and some, by the way, some of us understand he did live there. But Rashi himself says that at the time of the Akedah, Avram is no longer living in Be'er Sheva. He's living in Hebron already for 12 years. And these are Rashi's words on that Pasuk. When it says, Vayeshev Avram be'er Sheva, he stayed in Be'er Sheva. Lo yeshiva mamash. He didn't stay there for long. Shehari b'Hebron haya yoshev. Yud be'shanim lifnei akedosa she Yitzchak. He's already been living in Hebron for 12 years beforehand. So, that means that because he's living in Hebron, when he leaves the Akedah and goes to Be'er Sheva, and we have yet to find out why, by the way, one thing we do know, that's not his home. And therefore, when it says Vayeshev, says Rashi, Lo Yeshiva Mamash, he's not there for very long. He's there temporarily. But Rashi, interestingly, doesn't say what he's doing in Be'er Sheva. But the Ramban does. It's fascinating. The Ramban argues on Rashi, but at least he represents Rashi's side. Why would he go to Be'er Sheva? Says Ramban, even if he's living in Hebron, but there's something in Be'er Sheva. Avram, the Pasuk tells us, Vayita Eshel Be'er Sheva. The greatest enterprise of Chesed that Avram set up was in Be'er Sheva. Eshel, whatever Eshel is, Achila, Shtia, Lina, or Levaya. And it's interesting to wonder what happened to that Eshel when Avram moved from Be'er Sheva. Did it close down? Did they rent it out? Apparently it continued. In other words, he set up an enterprise of Chesed there, and he developed enough of a following. When he moved to Hebron, not everyone moved with him, but the Eshel kept going. It's the center of Chesed, and remains so. And therefore, says Ramban, an amazing thing. After the Akedah, Avram is looking to express his gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Consider, if you have a map of Israel in front of you, if he went from Hebron to Eretz HaMoria, Be'er Sheva is not on the way home. That's for sure. He detoured to Be'er Sheva. Why? He made a point of going down to Be'er Sheva in order to tell people about the Akedah, in order to express his Hakaras HaTovin, and make a further contribution to the Chesed that's going on there. That's his response to the Akedah before he goes home. And therefore, Avram spends very little time in Beersheba after the Akedah, a couple of days, no more than that. But that's where he came from. But if that's where he came from, then when the Pasuk said that when Sarah died, Avram came from Beersheba, that's as good as saying that Sarah died very soon after the Akedah. Because if Avram, and we know from Rashi himself, that Avram's only in Beersheba after the Akedah for a couple of days. So if the Pasuk tells us, he wants us to note that he's coming from Beersheba, that means the Pasuk wants us to note that Sarah died when he was in Beersheba. He was in Beersheba straight after the Akedah. She died straight after the Akedah. And therefore, Rashi's comment on the end of Pasuk Beis about Smichus is not, as we said, we're emphasizing it, it's not about Smichus Parshus. It's about the Smichus of events. Just you should know these two things happened next to each other. Why should you know? The Torah wants you to know. How do we know the Torah wants you to know? Because the Torah tells you that Avram came from Beersheba, which is right after the Akedah. And therefore, when it says, Vayavo Avram mi Beersheba, lispod lasar vilefkosa, the Pasuk is putting them together. It doesn't put the two sections of the Torah together, but between Parshas Vayera and Parshas of Chayei Sarah, but it puts the two events together in Pasuk Beis of Chayei Sarah. Vayavo Avram is straight after the Akedah. Lispod lasar vilefkosa tells us that her passing was straight after the Akedah. And therefore it's not Smichus Parshus, Smichus of events. So it's really a fascinating look at what exactly Rashi means to say, paying attention both to his words and all of the background to that. So from the first Rashi, or more correctly, not the first Rashi, but from Rashi at the beginning of the Parsha, let us take a look at deeper into the Parsha. Of course, the center is finding a wife for Yitzhak. And that begins at Perek Kaftalet. It's a long Perek. Most of this Parsha is Perek Kaftalet. And as we know, Avram calls Eliezer and makes him take an oath that he's not going to take from Benos Canaan. He has Dafkas to take from where Avram lived. How does the Perek begin? Avraham zakeh, baba yamim. Avram is old, coming in days. Hashem berachas Avram b'kol. Hashem blessed Avram with everything. And then pasuk beis, we get involved in finding a wife for Yitzhak. He calls Eliezer. Vayom Avram elav doze kan beiso. He makes him take the shvur, and the whole episode begins. A couple of questions on pasuk aleph. Because Pasuk Aleph is, in a sense, almost left behind as we get into the Parsha. Pasuk Aleph says, Avram Zakein, Baba Yemim, Vashem Berachat Avram Bakol. Vashem blessed Avram with everything. Okay. So the first question is, define everything. It's a rather open term. Okay. The Pasuk clearly means something, but the Pasuk also clearly relies on us to understand what it means. Talk about everything, it's contextual. But more compellingly, the question is, how does this pasuk form the introduction to finding a wife for Yitzchak? That's the important parshanut question here. As if to say, in order to tell us everything we need to know about finding a wife for Yitzchak, let's talk about Avram. He's the relevant party here. Number one, he was getting on. Number two, he had everything. That's all you need to know. From that point on, let's find a wife for Yitzhak. Presumably, a more appropriate introduction is not to tell me how Avram's doing, which I hope is very well, but how Yitzhak is doing. Tell me that Yitzhak was a red bad lady. Look, the Pasuk tells us how old Esav was when he got married. So why the Pasuk should say, and Yitzhak was already approaching marriageable age, so Avram called Eli. There's no mention of Yitzhak. That's an interesting question. Why is the 69 psukim long chapter devoted to finding a wife for Yitzchak begin by a description of how Avram is doing? That's a good sign. And another very interesting question, which is raised by Rabbi Yitzchak Aramar in the Akedas Yitzchak, is what about the opening words of the pasuk? V'Avraham zakein ba'bayamim. Avram's old, he's coming in days, whatever that means, ba'bayamim. Okay. Is this an expression that we we ever find in the Chumash, Zakein, Baba Yamim? Is it common? Have we ever seen it before? It happens to be, we have seen it before. I'm not sure how many times we'll see it again. But we've certainly seen it before. We've actually seen it before with regards to Avram and Sarah. Because in the beginning of last week's Parsha, when they receive the news that Sarah's going to have a baby, so the pasuk says, "Va'avraham v'Sarah zikenim ba'im bayamim." It is exactly the same template, which is interesting, because the Akedas Yitzhak now asks a very interesting question. How much time has elapsed between that pasuk and this pasuk? 40 years. Now, within the life of Avram, it's a long time. Last time this was said about him, he was 99. Now, he's 140. That's a good bit down the line. So it's very interesting that the pasuk doesn't really say anything more about him 40 years on than it said about him 40 years earlier. After all, none of this is, but just in terms of a description, if at 99, the very same words, Zakein Baba Yamim, now he's old. And 140, now he's old. He was old 40 years ago. Is there nothing else to say? More Zakein, more Baba Yamim, nothing's happened, nothing's changed in the last 40 years? That's an interesting question. And the answer of the Akedas Yitzhak, I should preface by saying, it doesn't make a material change in the substance of the Parsha, but the Parshanut is unbelievable. Says Akedas Yitzhak, the reason why the Torah uses the same expression in the beginning of this Parsha as it did in the beginning of last week's Parsha, it's because the beginning of this chapter happened at the same time as the beginning of last week's Parsha. That is to say, when Avram is 99, the Pasuk says, Avram is, sorry, Zakenim by Yamim, 99, that type of age, that's called Zakenim Ba'im Bayamim. Now, in giving us the background to finding a wife for Yitzhak, the Torah takes us back to that time when Avram and Sarah just had Yitzhak. It uses the identical phraseology, Zakein Baba Yamim, in order to timestamp and link us back to that time. The Akedah understands that the Shavua that Avram had Eliezer take was one that he made him take as soon as Yitzhak was born. And now, the Pasuk says, V'Avraham Zakein, Baba Yamim. That's that time, the beginning of Vayera time, when Yitzhak was born. Hashem Berech as Avram Bakol. Hashem blessed Avram with everything. What's everything? For Avram, everything is Yitzhak. That's it, that's what he's been waiting for. Yitzhak for him is everything. Hashem gave him everything else, and he says, I don't have anything if I don't have a son. Right? Hashem Elokim Matiteni, Unuchi Ole Hariri. That's not everything minus Yitzhak is nothing. With Yitzhak is everything. The Pasuk is telling us this is what happened originally, way back when Yitzhak was born. At that point, Hashem blessed Avram with everything. He gave him Yitzhak. The thing is, Avram is already thinking about Yitzhak's marriage plans. And he entrusted to Eliezer because he was old and he didn't know whether he would be able to see this through himself. Yitzhak is just born. It will be many years, a number of years, until he's ready to get married. Avram wants to deal with this right now. And therefore, that's why it prefaces by Avram Zakein, Baba Yamim. So he called Eliezer, and he made him take a Shavua. This Shavua was taken as soon as Yitzhak was born. And by the way, this explains to us such basic things. Yitzhak is not mentioned at the time of the Shavua. Is it not relevant to him? What was he doing at that time? He was busy? This is about the most important event of his life, in terms of his certainly family life. This is his wife. And who's involved in this meeting? Avram and Eliezer. Anyone else? No one else needs to be involved. Not even Yitzhak? Says Akedah, Yitzhak was a baby. Eliezer is the one who's already being put in charge of affairs. And that, I think, this the Akedah doesn't say, but I think it explains something else to us. Yitzhak is referred to in the beginning of the Parsha, practically as an object, in the sense that Avram and Eliezer are discussing between them, what should they do with Yitzhak? Should they bring him there? Should they not bring him there? Look at the Pasuk. It says, Eliezer says, Pasuk Hey, Vayomei Lafa Ebed, Ulai Lo Tova Haishal Lecha Sacharai La'aretz Hazos, maybe she won't want to come, Hehashev HaShivet Bincha, should I bring him there? And Avram says, no, under no circumstances, don't bring him there. In the end of Pasuk Ches, Rak Es B'ni Lo Seishev, don't bring my... Aren't these words that would be relevant to say to Yitzchak? If Avram says to Yitzchak, you are not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael, and by the way, Yitzchak in the fullness of time knows that, Eliezer can't bring him there. Why is Yitzchak being spoken about someone who's either being brought there, not being brought there? That's how he's being related to at the time. He's just been born. Now, this is background. As it happens, Avram was still very much alive when Eliezer went out. The chiddush of the Akedas Yitzchak is that in between the original Shavua and when Eliezer went out, there elapsed a period of 40 years, and Avram is still there, but he still remembers the Shavua, and now the time has come. So between Pasuk Tes, which represents the finalizing of the Shavua, Vayishavalo al Davarzeh, Pasuk Yud Vayikacha Eved Asra Gemalim, again, one Pasuk after the other, there's a lot of time in between. Interestingly, I don't wish to darshan aliyahs because there's no absolute insistence on these breaks per se. But between Pasuk Tes and Yud, there's a break of an aliyah. Sheni ends in Pasuk Tes, even though it sounds like the whole thing is just starting. And then Shlishi is between... I mean, the Mishaberach doesn't take that long, but I hope. But there's 40 years elapsed for the Akedah Sitzah between one and the other, which is fascinating. These are the comments of the Akedah Sitzah. Again, it's pure parshanut. Be that as it may, when the time comes, Eliezer gets going, and here he is. So, let's take a look at Eliezer's test. Of course, as we know, if there will be a test, it will be in the domain of Chesed, first and foremost, almost exclusively. For reasons that really echo what we mentioned last week, that Yitzchak, whose midah is that of Din, as surely as Sarah was Ezer Kenegdo of Avram, her midah of Din, she was complimented Avram's midah of Chesed, it's in a sense reversed with Yitzchak, because his midah is Gevura, his midah is that of Din, so his wife will need to be Chesed extreme. And extreme she is. The truth is, I mean, we read through the Parsha quickly, that's our loss. If we would only pause to contemplate the enormity of what Eliezer is asking, it sounds almost impossible. And then the only thing that boggles the mind more is that Rivka actually does it. For all the reasons in the world. What's his test? He'll say to her, give me to drink, and she'll say yes, and then give also his camels to drink. Firstly, it's a very busy place. I mean, everyone is out there drawing. And it's a curious feature of human nature that even people that would be inclined to help, it makes a big difference if there's no one else there. If there's no one else there to help, then of course I'm at your service. But if there's lots of people there, why'd you ask me? And everyone thinks that. So the more do-gooders there are in the same place, the less good ends up being done, because everyone looks at the others and say, well, you know, if no one else was here, I'd definitely do it. But everyone else is here, so why me? So it's a very busy time. And he picks on her, and she's a young girl. According to Rashi, she's 3 years old. Moreover, not only are there other people there, Eliezer has his own people with him. It just gets more and more extreme. I mean, it says, Asaram Migmalei Adonai, he's there with 10 other people. No, none of them can help him. She's got to help him. Moreover, the Pasuk actually says he ran up to her. Vayora tzelahaya v'likrosa. He ran up. Which also changes the situation in a sense. If he staggered up to her and collapsed, then maybe one thing. He's jogging up to her. And he asked her to draw the water for him. even at this stage, even if she wants to be helpful, she can say, look, and here's a spare jacket. I mean, you seem to be, you know, in very good form. Draw it yourself. He's running on the spot while she's drawing the water for him. On top of all of that, to have this further goodness to offer to give his camels to drink, it just beyond the beyond. And Rivka comes through in the stunning form. And moreover, she even calls him Adoni. And I think the way that people are referred to makes a big difference, because sometimes, even if a person does kindness, but it's important for them, for the recipient to feel unworthy, and the recipient of kindness, to give respect to the person that you're being kind to is sometimes harder, even. And the Gemara talks about it in Bava Basra, in the first Perek, to say a kind word to a poor person sometimes is harder than giving them money. Because when you give them money, so the relationship is understood. I'm the donor, you're the receiver, and that everything is as it should be. As soon as you begin to speak to them respectfully, it's a different dynamic altogether. Shesei Adoni. The Alshech raises a shaila. Why does Eliezer construct this test at all? What's the background to the question? Now, Mefarshim differ, and I'll preface by saying, who exactly was Eliezer meant to come to here in Haran? So, some say it doesn't make a difference to anyone in Haran, but there are certainly Mefarshim, Maharal, and others who understand that from the very outset, Ki el arti vel moladati means go back to my family. So, first preference is given, first refusal, is given to his family. His family don't live by the well. They live in their house. So what's the detour? The detour is almost, he wants to know who. He already knows who. He knows who he should go to first. If he went to them and they refused, and then now he's stuck, so then you can make a test. Listen, you know, the first choice didn't work out. Here I am. Someone else will have to. It didn't work on yichus. It's going to have to work on merit. But that's not the first place to first port of call. Should go to Avram's family. That's where he was sent to go. So why is he making this test? And the Alshik gives a very interesting explanation. Eliezer knows, and we get an insight into the faithfulness of Eliezer, even though he was snubbed himself because he had his own daughter that he wanted to marry Yitzhak, but nonetheless, you know, he swallowed that with grace and continues to do whatever he can to make things work for his master. He knows that Besuel and Avram's family, they could be trouble. They're the first choice, but they could be trouble. They can refuse. And the fact that they're first, from their point of view, of course we're first. First and last. But we get one. And therefore, Eliezer is looking to preface, before he even goes to them, he's asking for something that will give him ammunition. As if to say something so extraordinary that by the time he gets to them with this story, they can't refuse. In other words, it will be so overwhelmingly evident that Rivka is the one to marry Yitzhak, they can't say no. If they say no, they will have just missed out on history. And the truth of the matter is, when he goes over the story, they respond, they really can't get over it. Lavan and Besuel, Me Hashem Yotza Hadavar, I mean, these are words that they probably hadn't said for a very, very long time and would maybe never even say again. Me Hashem Yotza Hadavar, it's Bashert! Lavan and Besuel, how did they get so frum? They couldn't help it. You hear a story like that, Me'ashem Yatzadavar, they say, there's nothing we can say, says Eliezer. Good. Because if I hadn't come armed with this story, there'd be plenty you could say, most of it unsavory. So it's amazing, really, because Eliezer, if he was just doing his job, he would have made his way to their house, and maybe they would have said no, and what can you do? And in brackets, that may have reopened the possibility for his daughter now, because all bets are off. He goes out of his way to ask for this situation so that they won't say no. That's an Eved Ne'eman. It's interesting to consider in this regard certain words that Eliezer says to them. Let's take a look. He's finished going through the story. Perek Kaf Dalet Pasuk Memtes. Ve'ata. He's told them the whole story. It's overwhelming. Im yeshchem osim chesed ve'emes es adoni hagiduri. But he still puts it to them. If you want to be kind to me, do kindness and truth with my master, tell me. Ve'im lo hagiduri ve'fnali min v'asmol. It's also important at a certain point for them not to feel that they're the only option. Because if they feel they're the only option have a habit of causing trouble. So on the one hand, he gives them a good feeling because their first refusal, but they're not only refusal. I came here first, listened to the story, it's unbelievable. If you want to go through with this, fantastic. If not, we have other options. And that clinches it, because in the next pasuk, Vayan Lov and the Basur, Vayomu Mi Hashem Yatzar Davar. It's Bashur, especially if you're going to go somewhere else. It's definitely Bashur here. What is the meaning of this term? Chesed ve'emes. Again, we come across it once in a while. Chesed ve'emes, kindness and truth. What's kindness and what's truth? And why is this both? The Ibn Ezra, in a number of places, explains that chesed ve'emes are actually a progression. Something that begins with chesed and then ends up as emes. As we know, the difference between them is that emes is truth in the sense that one is obligated. Truth obligates. Where chesed is almost the antithesis to that. I mean, chesed is kindness, I don't have to. So how do chesed and emes work together? If it's chesed, it's not emes. I mean, it's almost a contradiction. But the Ibn Ezra explains that when a person undertakes to do something, he's bound by his word. Now, he's not bound to undertake it. It's his decision if he wishes to undertake it. But once he does, his word is his bond. Or to put it into this terminology, when you agree to something that you didn't have to agree to, that's called chesed. But once you agree, it then becomes emes. Because once you committed, so then you're bound by your word. And therefore, in the many cases that we find in the Torah, and even also throughout the Navi, people always ask for chesed ve'emes. What they mean is, I'd like you to, you don't have to agree, but I'd like you to, but then you're bound by it. Chesed becomes emes. Interestingly, the Radak, in his Perashat Tehillim, a Perikuf Lamed Vav, explains in this vein a pasuk that we say daily. It's a pasuk in Micha, in Perik Zion. Titein emes le'Yaakov, chesed l'Avram, asher nishbata l'Avseinu mimekedem. Emes liYaakov, Chesed laAvraham. What's the meaning of this pasuk? Al derech hapshat. We often quote this pasuk in terms of the attributes of the Avos. Avram is Chesed, and Yaakov is Emes. The pasuk actually talks about Hashem giving Emes liYaakov and giving Chesed laAvraham. That Hashem nishbata l'Avoseinu. And the Radak says the reference is to Eretz Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Eretz Yisrael to Avram. Once he promised it to Avram and to his descendants, then, so to speak, he's bound by that promise, by that oath, to follow through. And therefore, Eretz Yisrael was originally chesed l'Avram. It was an act of kindness to Avram to promise the land to him and his descendants. But once that's true, as the Avos culminate, chesed l'Avram becomes emes liYaakov. As the Avos progress, he's bound to committed to that promise. That Emes liYaakov was originally Chesed l'Avraham. In a very similar note, it's just fascinating to take a look at these words, Chesed ve'Emes, we have them here for the first time in the Torah. Some Mefarshim explain, again, conscious of the difference, the contrast between Chesed and Emes. Chesed is something you don't necessarily have to do, Emes as you do. So the Ibn Ezra says it's a progression. Others say, sometimes, that it can actually refer to different aspects within the same situation. Some aspects are in a sense, obligatory, and others are yet voluntary. We find, for example, in Yoshua, Perek Beis, this is the Haftarah for Parshas Shelach. It's the two Meraglim that Yoshua sends, and they're in trouble. The Canaanim are hunting for them. Rachab saves them. And she asks for something in return. She asks that when, she says, we know you're coming, and between me and you and everybody else, we know that you're going to basically take over the country. Please, will you spare me and my family? And they say, in Pasuk Yud Dalet, Va'asinu imach chesed ve'emes. We will. We will perform for you chesed ve'emes. Again, that term. Why chesed ve'emes? And there, the Radak, interestingly, in his Perish to Yeshua, explains that this is a composite agreement. It has aspects of emes and aspects of chesed. Why? Because Rachab saved their life. And therefore, it's only correct that they would spare her life. But she doesn't only ask for them to spare her life, she asks for the life of her whole family to be spared. Do they owe her family anything? Not really, not directly. They can agree, but if they do, that's chesed. And therefore here, chesed ve'emes actually splits up between the parties that she's asking for. For the family, it's chesed. And for her, it's emes. And in fact, it's even more explicit in the pasuk, because when she asks for them to spare her, she says, "Spare me," and then she says in pasuk Yud Beis, "Va'asim gamatem im Beis Avi Chesed," which she makes a point of discussing her family separately, and she mentions only Chesed. Because the family is the chesed part of the equation. She's the emes part of the equation. They put the two together and they say, absolutely, we will do, we will perform chesed ve'emes. So it's a very similar approach in the sense that we're cognizant of the different connotation of chesed ve'emes, and in this respect, it refers to different aspects of the same situation. Here, one could say very similarly, again, Eliezer asks for chesed ve'emes. V'atayim yeshem osim chesed ve'emes. Once again, it could be that please agree. You don't have to agree, but please you do. But once you agree, it's binding. Very similar to the Ibn Ezra. But the Al-Sheikh has a fascinating comment. The Al-Sheikh says, this, for them to agree, for them to consent after hearing this story, that Rivka should marry Yitzhak, is chesed and emes. At the same time. It's chesed and emes. Why? Because although officially it's chesed, in the sense that they don't have to do anything. They can say yes, they can say no. And if they don't have to say yes, but they do say yes, that we could call that chesed. Quite so. But Eliezer is saying, yes, it's kindness. But after the story that I just told you, where it's so abundantly clear that she is the one for Yitzhak, it's really emes. You know, this is force of destiny. She's got to marry Yitzchak. You could technically say no. But if you did, it would be a violation of emes. Because look at the situation. The whole story. How likely would it be? And I went to the well and I met her. She did exactly what I said she'd do. And that was all on the way here. It's almost as if Eliezer is saying, you know, you could say no. But if you do say no, really? Really? Who's she going to marry? If she doesn't marry Yitzhak, she'll marry Plony, someone else from Haran, after this story? It's false. Right, just don't say no. But if you do, you are on the other side of the truth of this whole situation. And Lavan and Basula are won over. So sometimes in certain situations, you could say no if you want, but the situation is compelling. It's sheker, really, to say no, not just withholding chesed. Those are the words of the Al-Sheikh, and they give us further depth and atmosphere just to exactly how Eliezer is trying to win over the family, essentially, to send Rivka never see her again. I'd like to conclude with one, I would say, diktuk kal, a nuanced observation that comes up in this pasuk, specifically contrasting two very similar terms. You never know. You never know what's in a word. My father, Olav Shalom, once said that the word for a word in Lashon HaKodesh is teva, like Rosh HaTevas. The teva is a box. Because in Lashon HaKodesh, every word is a box. When you open it up, there's something there. In Pasuk Mem Tes, Eliezer says, Va'ata, im yeshchem osim chesed ve'emes es adonai yagid. If you're going to do chesed ve'emes with my master, tell me. And if not, then I'll go somewhere else. So we have the idea of chesed ve'emes es adonai. Earlier on, in Pasuk Yud Beis, if we take a look at this very same perek, when Eliezer is just getting going, he says, Vayomar, right, with the shalshelet, Vayomar, Hashem Elokei Adonai Abraham, Hakreinah lefanayo, make things happen for me well today, Va'ase chesed im Adonai Abraham, perform chesed with my master Abraham. So in the beginning, Eliezer asks for chesed, Hashem to do chesed with Abraham, and then in the end he asks for Lahavdil, but he asks for Lavan and Basul to do chesed with Abraham. The difference between them, aside from the chesed ve'emes factor, is that the preposition has changed. In the first pasuk, he spoke about doing chesed im Adonai Abraham. In the second pasuk, he says, if you do chesed ve'emes es Adonai Abraham. Now, as we know, es and im are largely synonymous. And they both mean with. So do kindness with, you could use either. But Eliezer uses both. And he changes. And in a sense, the question for us is, what's the difference between kindness that's performed im Adonai or kindness that's performed es Adonai, if we may ask? And we may. I believe the answer is based on a well-known comment of the Vilna Gaon in Parshas Balak. And there he discusses the question that all Rishonim deal with, Rishonim and Acharonim. Hashem originally says to Balak, Bilam says, can I go? And curse Bnei Israel. Hashem says, no, you can't go. And then Bilam nudges, and then a second time, and then Hashem says, okay, you can go, but you can only do what I say. And then Bilam gets up, and he goes, and Vayicha af Elokim ki holech, Hashem gets angry that he's going. So all the Mefarshim say, well, I mean, you told him you could go. Maybe you're angry that you asked the second time, so to speak, but you, strictly speaking, you did say that he could go. So, and he went. So, why are you angry? And the Gaon says, because as far as the Gaon is concerned, and he says this many times, there's no such thing as a synonym in Lashon HaKodesh. If there's two words, it's because there are two channels, there are two streams within a certain idea. So we say that S means with, and Im means with, but there are two words, because, says the Gaon, there's two types of with. There's two ways that you can be with someone. Sometimes you're with someone, you don't necessarily have their interests at heart. It may be an issue of convenience. It may be very simply an issue of geography. People are on a bus, right? They're together with other people, but they're not with them. They don't identify with them. They don't know each other. And even if they do know each other, if it's only a very external collusion of interest that's gluing them together, but they don't really have each other's interests at heart, that type of together is called S. Very external. Im is a different type of together, when you're really together for the same reason. And lahavdil, but we know. You know that you can be together with someone, but you're not really with them. That means that you can be S, but you're not yet Im. When Balak, and there's a further question in Balak there, because it seems that Hashem, so to speak, just mind. Because the first time, Balaam says, can I go? And the answer is no. And the second time, can I go? And the answer is yes, okay. That's a very difficult situation. You can say, but derash adam rotelelech malicha no so. But actually, says the Gaon, there was no reversal of policy. Originally, when Balaam asks, he says, Balak has called me, right? Hashem says, Bayomer Elokim el Balaam lo telech imahem. You can't go with them. Lo telech imahem. Why would you go if not for the same reasons for them? That's unacceptable. So the answer is no. The second time, Balaam asks again. At this point, Hashem says, if you want, you can go. But not for their reasons. Hashem said to Bilam, Kum lech itam. That's not a reversal. Lo telech imahem and kum lech itam are two ways of saying the same thing. You can go, but not for their reasons. You're going for my reasons. That's not called imahem. That stands. If you want to go, it can only be on the formula of itam, for my reasons. If you're prepared to do that, good luck to you. Bilam got up the next morning, v'yashkem Bilam avoker, v'yelech im sarei Balak. All he heard was the yes. He's not interested in details or nuances. He can go with them. V'yelech im v'yicha afalekim keholach. Hashem was angry with him for going, because he never gave him permission to go im sarei Balak, only es sarei Balak. That's the classic distinction of the Gaon. And such, these are words, they don't seem to be the significant words, but they give the whole atmosphere of the situation. S and Im are two very different situations. Uli'inyanenu. I think this is the difference now between Eliezer's requests. He asked Hashem to be kind with Avram, he asked Lavan and Besuel to be kind. But it's not the same type of kindness. Because he knows that when Hashem does kindness with a person, Hashem has that person's interests at heart as much, if not more, than the person himself. And therefore, he says to Hashem, "Asei chesed im Adoni Avraham." It's called an im. It's an absolute cohesion. It's an absolute fusion, an identification. Because the kindness is Hashem is together with the person that he's doing kindness. Lavan and Mesul, even as they do kindnesses, it will never be because they have the recipient's interests at heart. It's not that type of kindness. Their kindness is only out of self-interest, and therefore, ironically, they're joined by an act of kindness, but they're separated by interest. It's an act of chesed, but that's called chesed es. And that's all that Eliezer can ask for them. So it's again fascinating. Two different ways of performing kindness. Chesed es and chesed im. And that, of course, is a lesson as we are looking to be inspired by Rivka herself. I'm not sure if we'll ever be called upon to do what she was called upon, and if we are, I'm not sure that we'll do it. But each one in our own spheres, the kindnesses that we do, we can see two different types of kindness. There's the Lavan type of kindness called Chesed Es, and then there's the V'halach, the Bedrachot type of kindness, which is called Chesed Im. The deed may be the same, it's a very different interaction altogether. We'll leave it over there for this.